Hello and welcome to the program. My name is Luke Hunt and this is another podcast for the Beyond the Mekong series, which is broadcast by The Diplomat. And with me today is Andy Ball. Andy is a British filmmaker. He has been working out of Cambodia for the past 5.5 years, and his latest effort, The Clearing, focuses on Mother Nature and the environmental activists who have done an awful lot in Cambodia to raise the awareness of the issues confronting the environment, the ecology, and several of them about a year ago were jailed for up to 8 years for releasing a report on sewage leaks into the Mekong River system. And that has upset quite a few people, particularly the severity of the sentences. Andy, welcome to the program.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
How did The Clearing come about? You were funded by the Pulitzer Center, and you made approaches to Monga Bay, which is a very well-known environmental publication.
Yeah, I've been working as a documentary filmmaker in Cambodia, and myself and my co-director, Marfi Copeland, we doing a documentary about Mother Nature it's years now. Yeah, I think a lot of great articles and videos have come out about Mother Nature, their work, their campaigns, but really we wanted to do a kind of longer form documentary that was going to be more in the kind of life of the activists. And you know, when we started filming the back in I guess May 2023, there were a number of activists, and the protagonist of the film, Lee Kunda Revert, who was out on bail and awaiting trial for the plotting charges against him. And so, yeah, the documentary, really, we wanted to kind of get behind the personal lives of the activists and show what was it like for young environmentalists to work in Cambodia, where it's becoming increasingly difficult for environmental activists to carry out their work.
Right. How do they differ? And I ask that question because when you see the photographs of them, you read the stories, there's almost a cult-like aura about them, dressed in white outside the courts. They are very young overall, as opposed to other environmental groups, which seem to have a much broader age range. How did you find them, and how did you compare them with other environmental groups?
I think Mother Nature Cambodia, as you said, they've got a really large following, and I think they're really kind of captivated a huge audience, particularly on social media. So over the last few years, you know, kind of cracked down on environmental activists in Cambodia, I think they increasingly turned social media to spread their messaging through particularly Facebook. And I think right now they have around almost 500,000 followers on Facebook, which is, you know, particularly large when you consider the country's population's nearly 18 million. And yeah, they've increasingly turned to Facebook to their campaigns. And I think quite often as well, they've taken on, you know, they've created videos almost in a way that's quite unique in the sense that, you know, sometimes they're humorous, but also they can be quite serious and investigative. And I think that's captured the attention, particularly of a lot of young people in Cambodia.
Sure, and I think those numbers would have captured the attention of the authorities as well. The charges of plotting against the government, which has become all too common, with the crackdown, which began almost 10 years ago, and you know, initially it was sedition and incitement and defamation, and now you have these kids who are basically releasing reports about dangers to the environment, and they're being charged with plotting to oust the government.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, as you said, four of the activists there last year, all five plotting charges, and one of them had both plotting and less nice to say charges, with all them kind of getting jail sentences, I think 6 to 8 years. But yeah, I think, you know, a lot of critics and human rights organizations have come out and said the government is using the charges as, you know, they're weaponizing the court and using these charges to cry down on environment activists and groups. And I think that's something we see not only with Mother Nature Cambodia, but other environmental activists, other environmental journalists. You know, even in the last year alone, I think it was November last year, we saw 6 very prominent environmental activists who were arrested but then released without charges while investigating environmental crime. And then a month after that, Jim Jang, who was a journalist based in Siem Reap province, he was also investigating environmental crime, but was killed. And then, yeah, even recently now, obviously we had Jerry Flynn, who works for Monga Bay, who was denied re-entry into the country. And then Uk Mao, who was a journalist, who was an environmental journalist, he was arrested and charged. And he's now on bail. You know, I think attacks on journalists and attacks on environmental activists have just ramped up over the last year. And yeah, the court has been putting charges like plotting, for example, Mother Nature activists increasingly against those who report on certain environmental issues.
Yeah, the Jerry Flynn case was interesting in that it's rarely that a foreign journalist is targeted like that, or singled out, perhaps I should say. And he was president of the Overseas Press Club and has now rebased in Bangkok. But he basically was banned from Cambodia for appearing in a France 24 documentary where he was the subject. He was simply being interviewed by the producers. And I thought that was kind of telling in the shift in attitude by the government.
Absolutely. I think, you know, as you've seen with the journalist community, we've seen it shrink very rapidly over the last few years. And so I think, particularly Jerry, who was publishing a lot of continued reporting on environmental crimes and issues across Cambodia, it's obviously that would put a target on their back. And I think in Jerry's case, it's something that we hadn't seen until recently, where the government ready to take action against foreign journalists. You know, I will say, actually, just on the Korean Kismal, maybe it's a good time. It wasn't just me who made the, there was a huge team behind it. And we had a lot of Cambodian journalists and fixers and sound recorders who chose, obviously, not to be named on the credits, but we couldn't have made the documentary without. And I think, you know, these Cambodian journalists and Cambodian fixers and translators are taking enormous risks when it comes to reporting on environmental issues.
That's actually what I wanted to ask you next, is did you have any issues with the authorities in the making of the clearing?
Yeah, surprisingly, actually, throughout the whole filming process, we didn't have any issues. As you'll see from the film, we filmed most being Cambodia, and then part of the film was also filmed in Sweden. But yeah, we didn't have any issues. And as far as I'm aware, we haven't had any response, at least not direct response from the government or any relevant ministry.
Yeah, it's difficult to know sometimes what upsets them, why they go after certain people or what will set them off. Like the France 24 piece did upset them, but I'm not entirely sure why. Perhaps because Cambodia is a Francophone country and France 24 kind of struck a chord. I think some of it might have to do with whether or not you're actually being noticed.
Yeah, I think that's true. You know, I think it's hard to know what's really going to upset certain people in the government here. But I think particularly with video, it has that ability, particularly through social media, to rack up a lot of views. And I think, at least in my opinion, that's probably where it starts to get noticed, when it gets out to a lot of people. And at least, the France 24 program did. But as you said, it's very unpredictable and hard to know really when or how that will happen.
Yeah. What's the response to the clearing been?
Yeah. I think from Cambodian colleagues and friends, kind of at least good to hear that they thought it showed a new perspective on Mother Nature Cambodia. It hasn't got as many views as we like, I think. So we're hopefully going to try and push out with the more through film festivals. We're also doing an event at the FCCT in Bangkok on the 4th of September.
Right.
Green film.
Yep.
A lot of Cambodians obviously know who Mother Nature are, and I think, at least from what I heard, it was good to hear that we offered that new perspective that maybe hadn't been put out into the public before.
Right. What brought you to Cambodia in the first place? It's you arrived at a difficult time, and as you mentioned, the ability to work there has, the civic space has shrunk enormously in the last 5 years, a continuation of the last decade, really. But why Cambodia?
Yeah, I mean, there was actually no very specific reason. I had an interest in going freelance as a photographer and videographer, particularly covering environmental stories and issues. And Yeah, I came over because I had a friend living here who kind of suggested it would be a good place. And obviously, as you said, I arrived at a bad time, but it was still a lot easier than it is now to work on environmental stories. And there was a relatively larger journalism and video photographer community than there is now.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's what brought me here.
Yeah, the pool of journalists has shrunk enormously over the years. But how do you... you're certainly not a newcomer. I mean, 5.5 years is a good chunk of time. But how do you view the state of the Cambodian environment, given what's happened, I guess, in the last 30 years? Knock out 5 years because the war was continuing. But the environment has been such a constant issue over the years. And there's always this retaliation from the private sector or the government, and an insistence that we're always doing the right thing. But every year, I was reading another report from the EU, I think it was the University of Denmark, that came out and confirmed that 123,000 hectares of forests had been lost in 2023. You know, they're doing the numbers, and that was a year ago. It takes a while to get these numbers through. But it just never seems to be getting any better. Or am I just being too negative?
Well, I think I can really only speak from probably more the photographer and videographer perspective, but yeah, definitely becoming harder. I mean, as you said, you know, the journalism community has shrunk significantly in just the time I've been here, probably gone from, at least for independent freelancers and foreigners working in independent media, which of course now are mostly shuttered, but it's probably gone from 30 40 people, and now I think it's, well, I don't know how many, but certainly probably around 10-15. And yeah, I think, you know, there's in the kind of photography and video space that there's less people doing it, because I think it's becoming increasingly harder. You know, for example, we've heard over the last year that a lot of people, independent photographers, videographers, and journalists haven't been able to get their press cards issued, and with the new press charter, of course, that outline we must be working with one. So I think there are many ways in which it's becoming harder, and I can't envision over the next few years that becoming any better. And we've even seen recently that drones of a certain size are no longer, you can't fly those without certain permits. And yeah, I can just see these regulations kind of creeping more and more into the work the journalists and videographers that are carrying out.
Right. What's your favorite part of Cambodia when you go out to shoot? When you get up in the morning, you want the morning light, and you're out there in the raw environment, and it's like, wow, this is stunning, this is gorgeous.
Yeah, I think for the two places, I love Phuong Trang on the border to Lao. You've got the Ramsar site up there with a the flooded forest. Seems really unique, and I think a lot of people, or not enough people, don't visit. And that's stunning, but definitely equal to that, Koh Kong province. You've got the Kardon Mountains, which is a really, really beautiful, interesting part of the country, you know, all the way from the Rang Valley down to the coast. You've got almost every ecosystem. It's really amazing. And actually, that's where we filmed part of the documentary and where I at least worked a lot before.
Right, on the Cardamoms, it's been a controversial area over the years, and it's also one part of Cambodia where the government has been seen to take the environment seriously in terms of preserving it. Nevertheless, there have been issues with pilfering logs. There have been issues with, there's one NGO running around up there with armed guards. How did you find the area? And did you notice much clearing? Is it still as pristine as it once was?
Yeah, I mean, I believe that coming back, Mother Nature Cambodia was formed in 2012, and one of their first campaigns was in the Kardon Mountains, specifically in Arang Valley. And at that time, they were planned to build a hydropower dam, validate and displace the indigenous communities living there, and also destroy a lot of forest. So Mother Nature successfully, with the community, campaigned against the dam, and it was never built. Now, it's obviously a huge win for the Kardon Mountains and the community, Narang. But even a bit before that, and since then, we've seen huge amount of development projects go into the Cardinals. I mean, particularly hydropower projects. We've seen a number of those recently crop up. And, you know, in the Cardinals, infamously, these hydropower projects are associated with the illegal logging. And so that's really touched these mountains, which I think were for a long time, you know, in very good condition. But as you've seen recently, a lot of forest is being lost. And then you go down to the coastline to Bottoms Core National Park, which is where the scene of the clearing starts. That's a kind of flat national park that connects kind of a mountainous area to the ocean. And I'm not even sure we can call it a national park anymore. There's been a huge number of concessions put inside of that park. Most of it was designated now under these concessions. And I think, you know, in the clearing, you can see this drone shot for the opening of the opening scene. You can see this drone shot deforestation. I think that concession was part of Royal Group's new concession. Royal Group's headed by Kit Meng, obviously a very close ally to former Prime Minister Hun Sen. And when Mother Nature were filming this and then creating the campaign, a video around the, you know, I think this is why environmentalists like Mother Nature are being targeted by the government, because they are conflicting with these interests of a very small group of people who are capitalizing off of these places. And so with the Cardinals, we've seen that increasingly over the last decade or two, where a lot of development projects owned by a very small group of people generally connected to the government are exploiting these natural resources.
The hydro dam projects have always been interesting right across Southeast Asia. A lot of that tall timber would be valued at $3,000 a log. That was 20 years ago, so maybe $9,000-$10,000 now. And when they flood those valleys, the first thing they do is pull out the timber. And when they build that road through, which is often going to be a bit wider than it has to be, they're going to pull out all that timber as well. And there's a lot of money in them Bar Hills.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's something that was being not just in the Carter Mountains, but in a lot of protected areas all across Cambodia, which again, Mother Nature's Cambodia was, and a lot of other environmental activists were raising awareness about. Yeah, we've seen a lot of development projects and privatization of the national parks. And then also over the last 10 years or so, we've seen a number of sub-decrees which have been released, which are intended as part of zonation of these sec areas. And sometimes we've seen that these sub-decrees, when they've been released, they've been open to abuse by private actions, generally quite powerful individuals. That's something, again, with being a government.
Yeah. The government's become quite adept at sub-decrees, decrees, passing legislation, and it's very good at telling people what they want to hear. They run a very slick PR machine these days. But it always comes back to the same complaints that what's left of the pristine wilderness is fast disappearing.
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, it's going to be communities who live in these protected areas who are going to be the ones losing out, and a very small minority of the population who are going to be profiting over the natural resources being extracted. Yeah.
By all reports, the clearing is getting very good reviews. What are you planning next? What's on the agenda?
Yeah, I mean, actually, I'll be leaving Cambodia soon to be based in Bangkok, but I still intend to report on Cambodia through video and other places in the region. But yeah, no plans for a documentary just yet.
Yeah.
Well, what other countries are you interested in? By from Bangkok, you can broaden your horizons quite substantially.
Yeah, to be honest, I'm not really sure. I've been so wrapped up with moving from Cambodia that for me, obviously, Thailand, and I think we'll start there and see how it goes.
Right. Mother Nature has also had a rather interesting history. How did you get involved, or more importantly, take us back through that history?
Yeah, so Mother Nature Cambodia was founded in 2012. And one of their first campaigns was in the Lang Valley in Kokon to stop a hydropower dam project going in that could have flooded the forest and displaced the indigenous communities in that area. They worked with the community, and ultimately the campaign was successful. But then after that, they did a number of other campaigns. So they did one on illegal sand mining, again, same province. Yoko Kong for the campaign against the band that were being exported from a place called Pien Ksopt, beautiful mangrove area in Gokong, to Singapore for land reclamation projects. And it was found that there was discrepancies in the trade data. So obviously there was illegal sand mining going on. And after that, they did a number of other campaigns. So we saw recently they were campaigning against the filling in of the Trumpan lakes and wetlands, which obviously are really important for not only for the ecological value, but also for the city itself, for the services they offer as a mitigation of floodwaters. And then also the privatization of national parks. So as you'll see in the documentary, that was something that they were focused on recently. But yeah, they're really using social media as their kind of means, or at least recently, to get their messages across to the Cambodian public. They recently, as you said, the group are really well known among a young audience in Cambodia, but also I think internationally. They won the Right Livelihood Award, which is often called the Alternative Nobel Prize, back in 2023. And so, yeah, they become, I think, quite well known internationally as well as in Cambodia.
Yeah, where does their support base come from overseas? Because there was Alex Gonzalez Davison, who was a Spanish environmentalist and had supported them enormously in their early days, and he was subsequently banned from Cambodia. And to my memory, he was the first foreign activist to be told, you know, you can't come back. But where do they get their support from? How does their network work?
Yeah, I mean, I can only really speak to probably the last couple of years when we went on the documentary about Mother Nature Cambodia, but particularly after they won the Right Livelihood Award and they went for Sweden to receive it in November. They have managed to draw up a lot of support, particularly in Sweden, from even politicians, other places in Europe. But also, I think a lot of international human rights organizations and civil society organizations really recognize the work that they're doing in an increasingly hostile environment. And so, yeah, they've become increasingly noticed internationally for that.
Right. And where are they now? I mean, I would imagine that those who aren't behind bars are keeping a low profile, but are they trying to remain active? Are they trying to work with the government? I noticed Ligado, the human rights group, commemorated their first year behind bars by urging their release, and they had a lot of other support groups coming in, signing off on statements to that effect. But the Mother Nature activists, where are they now and what are they doing?
Yeah, I don't know what specifically individuals working for Mother Nature are now. I mean, as you said, you can still see a lot of support from them from human rights groups like Licardo. But also they're still able to publish information on their Facebook and through social media. So I understand that they're still working together and able to operate the movement despite the jailing of five of the activists last year. Yeah, I think that really shows the value in how they take in social media as a group and really used as a tool to spread information and awareness about environmental issues.
They have a lot of grit.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, Cambodia's a small place and it's easy to get recognized, particularly when you're calling out certain people. Although I will say that, obviously the jailing of the activists, the dissidents was, at least to me, a big shock and to a lot of other Cambodian colleagues I spoke to. And I do wonder, what youth are interested in pursuing environmental activism or even working on environmental issues, whether through journalism or other way. I wonder how they're feeling now about the future of maybe getting into this profession.
Yeah, I was in Phnom Penh when the sentencing went down, and the response from ordinary Cambodians to the severity of the jail terms was quite, they were quite shocked, and many felt it was totally unnecessary. But anyway, Andy Ball, on that sad note, thank you very much. It's been a delightful chat.
Yeah, thanks a lot for having me.
Okay. Good luck with the next project and Bangkok.
All right. Thank God, Lee.
I guess.